Is telework a goal or a reality for your organization? Learn what you and your agency need to know at the Telework Center on federalnewsradio.com, keyword telework, sponsored by Tanberg.
Wake up and drive in with Tom Temin and Amy Morris on The Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Looking for usable news and information that helps you do your job? Tune into In-Depth with Francis Rose every weekday afternoon from 1 to 3 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Francis explores the relationship between agencies and Congress by taking you to the hearing rooms on Capitol Hill and asking questions of federal decision makers and experts. You'll get a first-hand look at how Congress affects your agency's personnel, funding, and oversight. In-Depth also looks at the relationship between agencies and contractors, companies that do billions of dollars of business with the federal government, talk about the work they're doing for agencies, the work they're bidding on, and the work they didn't get. And In-Depth will help you be a better manager. Francis talks to authors, scholars, and managerial experts about managing projects, managing your workforce, and managing yourself. In-Depth with Francis Rose, every weekday afternoon from 1 to 3 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. Delighted to have you with us. We've got a triple header for you today. We're going to be talking about the Thrift Savings Plan with Penny Moran of the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board. Then we're going to switch over and talk with Patricia Niehaus. She is president of the Federal Managers Association. We're going to ask her about this federal pay raise, pay freeze that we have predicted and is now getting closer to reality. And then we're going to be talking with Carol Bonacera. Of the Senior Executives Association. Carol is going to give us an update, a live, if you will, update from the Senior Executive and Deloitte leadership session, which is going on even as we speak. So we're going to hear from all three of those. And first, we got a clip from something that Penny Moran of the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board said yesterday on our air.
Have you ever had trouble with your TSP? You know, something you didn't know where to turn, or you had some information? Well, we're going to answer those questions for you right now. Of course, the folks at the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board really do put a lot of time and thought into how to best serve those with a TSP account. But from time to time, you're going to have questions about your TSP. Well, where are you going to turn? Well, I'll tell you where we turn. Penny Moran is the director of the Office of Participant Services at the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board, and this is one of her areas of expertise. So we're so happy to have her with us. Penny, thanks so much for joining us.
It was my pleasure.
So I'm going to tell you how this idea came about. I got a call from a listener and said, I'm having a problem with my TSP, and I don't know how to reach out to them. So we're going to walk through a number of different scenarios, and you guys were good enough to send us a number of the scenarios that you're often faced with. So we're going to walk through a couple of these, and you can tell people how the best way is to reach out to you. So let's start off with somebody who maybe isn't in the TSP. You're Fed, and you keep hearing everyone talk about the TSP, and you say, okay, is this the right thing for me? The first place to go, probably the website, right?
You got that. Everything you ever wanted to know about the TSP is out on our website, which is www.tsp.gov. We've got information out there. We've also have calculators that can help you decide how to maximize your contributions. We have links to other websites that can help you with your retirement planning, like the Ballpark Estimator. It is a wealth of knowledge, and we usually send everyone out to the website as the first step in learning about TSP. And they can also ask their agencies. Their personnel offices can provide them with information of how TSP fits in with their retirement system, and then how they can get started with TSP within their agency.
Now, even if you're, that's if you're not participating, but it's even a good resource if you are a TSP participant. There's all sorts of information there.
It's a resource throughout your career with the TSP. It will take you from cradle literally to grave, because we have information out there for your beneficiaries as well.
And I spend a lot of time on the TSP website, tsp.gov, and it does a very good job. I think sometimes we talk about L funds and I funds and G funds, mm-hmm. and people can get a little bit like, I don't know what a G fund is. You have a whole page where it describes what all the funds are.
Right. We don't give investment advice, but we provide information about all of our five individual funds. And of course, we have our life cycle, our L funds. For those people who don't have any experience in investing, or maybe they don't have the time to manage their own accounts, they want basically us to do it for us. All they have to do in picking an L fund is to decide when they think they're going to need the money, and then pick the L fund that's closest to when they're going to need that income.
I call it the set it and forget it.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, you just, yeah, I mean, if I was in TSP, that's where I would put my money because I don't want to have to worry about it day to day.
Well, we have about 690,000 participants and growing who have money in one of the L funds.
Now, this is a situation that somebody came to me about. They were having problems. There was a problem with the allocation numbers, and it wasn't right. So if you're having a problem, then what do you do?
First of all, really figure out if you've got a problem, because if you aren't certain what your contribution allocation is, where you're having your new money invested, or perhaps with an interfund transfer, you can always check where you are currently by going out to the website in My Account, My Access section. Or you can always call us. If you have a question about a transaction with the TSP, not your contributions or loan payments, but actually a transaction, you can give us a call at 866-968-3778. Or for those people who don't like numbers, it's TSPU, first, FRST. And the call center reps will help them with that issue, figure out what's going on, and then see what we can do to get it corrected.
Great. And we'll have that number also on federalnewsradio.com, so you can find it nice and easy. We don't want people driving around writing down numbers, for goodness sakes.
And it's also out on the website.
And it's out on the website. So, but I know you get a lot of questions about loan payments and how that works. What are some of the questions you get, and if somebody has a problem, where do they go?
First things first, everybody has to remember, if they take a loan, they're responsible for those loan payments. When we issue a loan, we contact the payroll office that said, this participant has taken a loan. These are what the loan payments are. Please start loan payments. If for some reason those loan payments don't start coming out of the paycheck, the participant needs to go to the payroll office and say, what's going on, and get them started. But in addition to that, they need to make sure that any missed payments are taken care of. They have to send a check directly to us, and we'll apply it against the missing payments. If they don't keep their loan payments current, they may actually have a taxable distribution of a loan, which means that any outstanding balance and accrued interest becomes taxable income, and they may have to pay the 10% early withdrawal penalty tax.
Mm.
So the last thing they want to do is say, well, the payments aren't coming out of my paycheck, it's my payroll office's fault. That's not going to be the case.
You don't want to end up in that situation, because that's a whole bunch of problems.
And we do notify people when they are in arrears so that they know they have to take action.
Now, if you end up in a situation where you need help managing your account in some way, either requesting a loan, maybe, God forbid, you got separated, and so you need to deal with those issues, is there a place where you can go for those kinds of questions?
First of all, start with the website, and then if you've got a transaction question, you can call the call center. In fact, most of our calls at the call center are about loans and withdrawals. How do I take a loan? What's the status? And you can go to the website and find out what the status, or you can try and get the status from the automated thrift line, which is also an option.
There you go. And finally, I imagine you get a lot of people saying, hey, I've moved, I need to change my address. Seems like the best place to go is probably the website, but
addresses are special. If you are an active employee, you have to change your address through your agency. Now, many of the agencies have automated employee self-service systems, and they can change their address there, or they go to their personnel office or go to payroll. Once you're separated, then you can change the address directly with us, either on the website, sending us a letter, or calling the call center. We'll take it over the phone.
There you go. But the main thing is do the website. The website's there's a lot of information there. Mm-hmm. You've tried to automate as much as of this process as you can, and there's a lot of great stuff there.
I would agree with that.
There you go. Give the address one more time and give the phone number one more time for anyone who wasn't ready yet.
The address is www.psp.gov, and the phone number is 866-968-3778.
Thank you. That was Tracy Ray. She appeared yesterday on Chris Dorbeck's show, and it was a lot of good information. And, you know, everybody nowadays tells you to go to the website, but in the case of the TSP, it really is a superb website, and even the likes of me can mostly find what I need to do on it. So it's a wonderful thing. And, of course, the TSP is one of our favorites. Alan Roth, the Dare to be Dull investment guru, and I both have a standing offer with anybody in government. We will trade accounts, balances with you if you can get us into the TSP. I'm going to take a short break here. When we come back, we'll be talking with Patricia Niehaus from the Federal Managers Association about pay freezes, the NSPS, and the like. Be right back here on 1500 AM.
Kevin Foster, Office of the Secretary of Defense, on the Federal Executive Forum on Secure Cloud Computing, sponsored by McAfee.
For DOD to have a cloud computing environment that perpetuates a real-time information sharing environment that's flexible, agile, secure, have single sign-on, a standardized CNA.
To listen to the whole program, made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
The rapid rise in cybersecurity threats and compliance requirements make protecting citizens' confidential information increasingly challenging. McAfee is the standard throughout federal, military, intelligence, and civilian enterprises worldwide. McAfee's capabilities are essential to keeping federal agencies ahead of the latest cyber threats. To learn more about how McAfee can help your organization combat cybersecurity threats, please call 1-888-VIRUS-NO or go to McAfee.com/government.
This baseball season, Federal News Radio, HP, and Intel are supporting area troops with tickets to all Washington Nationals home baseball games. A donation of 81 four-packs of tickets has been made to USO Metro on behalf of Federal News Radio, HP, and Intel. Tickets will be distributed through USO Metro's free ticket program, Ticket Line. Visit usometro.org for more information. What about the Obama administration's open government directive? How does embracing new technology foster an open government agenda? What is the U.S. General Services Administration doing to be more transparent, collaborative, and accountable? Listen next week as these questions and more will be explored by Dr. David McClure, Associate Administrator of the Office of Citizen Services and Communications at the General Services Administration. Next week, join host Michael Keegan on the next edition of the Business of Government Hour.
Cellist Yo-Yo Ma, one of the great stars of classical music, enthralls audiences all over the world with his passion and artistry. When it comes to picking a cello, he tends toward Italian instruments made in the 18th century. When it comes to a timepiece, however, he favors an instrument crafted in Switzerland, the Rolex Datejust. Since Rolex introduced the first self-winding calendar wristwatch in 1945, the Datejust has become one of the most sought-after models in the Oyster line. With its classic oyster design and magnified date window, the Datejust is every bit as distinctive as the master cellist who wears it. To see the Datejust and a complete selection of other Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Tourneau, the world's largest watch store since 1900. Tourneau, the fashion center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorbeck. Here's what we're working on for the Wednesday edition of the Dorbeck Insider. Ever heard of climaterials? It's the greening of building construction, and a young scientist at EPA is working to foster environmental building construction. That remarkable work has earned her a place as a finalist for the SAMMY Awards. You'll get to meet her this afternoon, and we'll tell you about a new survey on telework. Has the federal government made progress? All that and much more this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorbeck Insider. It's only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. We're going to, as I said, we had a triple header today. We've gotten the TSP out of the batting order, and now we're going to be talking with Patricia Niehaus. She is the new president, relatively new president, of the Federal Managers Association, and we had a little cell phone problem before, but Patricia, we got you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Madam President, welcome to the show. And listen, I know this, but just for our audience, could you tell us what you do and where you do it from?
Well, the Federal Managers Association has a national office in D.C., and I'm actually located in California most of the time, but I commute back and forth to D.C. And in my professional life, other than the professional association, I am the labor relations officer at Travis Air Force Base in Northern California.
So you know a little bit about the subject from both ends of it.
Yes.
Appreciate the Congress has dropped another bombshell. I wrote on June 11th that there was a likelihood that they would make another run at having a federal pay freeze in this January, and I said it was going to happen before the election, but it turns out it was introduced yesterday. There's a proposal to do this again. What happened the last time, and what are you looking for in this case?
We would hope that Congress would follow the many years past practice of equal raises for civilians as for military. We feel the pay parity is a reasonable goal.
Well, the last time this came up, they were going to have a pay freeze for civilians only. The vote was very close in both the House and the Senate. Was it too close for comfort?
Yeah, we would have preferred a much larger margin, of course.
What do you think of the odds? You know, my thinking was a lot of incumbents are worried about returning to Washington, and the only way they can get reelected to their jobs and come back here and work in Washington is to run against Washington, and many of them are doing it. And beyond the Beltway, and you know, those of us who live here, we have a fairly skewed view of the world, but you're beyond the Beltway, you're in California, and you talk to real people out there. Wouldn't this be a popular idea with the public?
I don't know. I know it would be a popular idea with federal employees to have pay parity, but I don't know. I have heard comments that why should federal employees get raises, you know, when other people are being laid off, but that I don't hear that being said about private companies.
Yeah, well, it's true. A lot of federal workers feel that when the market was booming in the 90s, that they were sort of left out of things, and now that they're doing very well, considering many people in the private sector, they think it's a turnabout and it's not fair. When I talked to Jessica Clement the other day and Carl in your office, they said that you were interested in a bill that's just been introduced by Congressman's, well, it's a Washington delegation, Jim Moran, Jerry Connolly, they're Virginia Democrats, Frank Wolf, who is a Republican from Virginia, and they've introduced a federal supervisory training bill. What's that all about?
This is requiring new managers to have training initially within 1 year of appointment to or promotion to a managerial position, and that it be instructor-led the first time, and then follow-up training after 3 years, and updates every 3 years. We feel that this would be, it would actually result in a cost savings to agencies if they were to pursue this more rigorously.
I would have thought that was sort of standard operating procedure, that or maybe even someone wasn't promoted until they'd had the training, but certainly shortly thereafter. But it's not automatic?
No, it's not automatic. So that's, and part of the problem is funding. So we're hoping that Congress will not only approve the bill requiring the training, but also fund it.
Well, President Obama or the OMB have called upon federal agencies to cut spending 5%. And many people have speculated that since the government is in a hiring mode in so many agencies, that the usual suspects, hiring, training, and travel, are going to be narrowed down to training and travel. And that would not bode well for your bill. Former Congressman Tom Davis was on the Morning Drive show this AM, and he was talking about this 5% cut, and he said, I believe I quote him correctly, it's stupid, because he said that's not where the money is. The money and the savings would be in entitlement programs.
Yeah, I agree. Our part of the budget isn't
increasing on a permanent basis to the extent that I think it is a problem. A lot of the jump in recent hiring, I think, at least my speculation is, that it was probably the Census Bureau people. And they gear up every 10 years, and then they gear right back down after they complete the census. So I don't know that that was being taken into account when they're talking about how much the government is growing.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people finally figured that out. They talked about how much employment had grown over the summer months, and I guess May, and then it turned out that some 300,000 of them were temporary census workers who were going to be around for 6 weeks or so, and that did funny things to the stock market when you're looking at employment levels. This National Security Personnel System, it covers only Defense Department people, but many federal workers have a stake in what happens to it one way or the other, because it is very possible, it is very likely that the Obama administration is going to propose a series of civil service reforms probably sooner rather than later, probably introduce them this year or certainly early next year. And one component of that would be some kind of pay-for-performance system over and above what the government now has. Now, the federal unions have said they don't want NSP light, which is L-I-T-E as in light beer. And we've heard that before. And they were instrumental in getting the National Security Personnel System killed off and rolled back in the Defense Department. Now, I believe there were 226,000 people who were put under NSPS. Many of them, or maybe most of them, are in your bailiwick under your jurisdiction. That is, they're not part of bargaining units, but they may be managers or whatnot. First off, how did people do? Because, you know, we heard horror stories going in that this was going to be, that people would never get raises, that was the end of life as we know it, that the buddy system would prevail. How did it actually work out?
Well, our members have reported both sides, failure and success of the program. I think how it operated depended largely on where you were. There did not seem to be a consistent application across DOD. I have not heard from people who actually lost money, provided they were rated at 3 or above under NSPS. You know, the people rated 1s and 2s, of course, they would not keep up with the GS schedule because they were either unacceptable or marginal performers. But I think that there were a lot of good aspects to NSPS. The flexibility in hiring and classification was a godsend to DOD agencies trying to hire, especially professionals like engineers, doctors, having the flexibility to not have to, you know, keep within 10 steps of a particular GS grade made it much easier to persuade those people to come to work for the government instead of going to a large city like San Francisco and
making
big bucks.
Trisha, need to take a short break here if you can stick with us. When we come back, I'll ask you some more about NSPS and some other things here on WFED 1500 AM.
Checking your daily TSP ticker, the latest numbers from June 15th, 2010. The G Fund is unchanged at $13.31. The F Fund loses 0.01 at $13.86. The C Fund rises 0.31 at $13.34. The S Fund moves up 0.44 at $17.90. The I Fund also up 0.44 at $16.94. We have gains for your L funds. The 2040 up 0.31 at $15.71. The 2030 rises 0.27 at $15.56. The 2020 up 0.21 at $15.42. The 2010 rises 0.08 at $15.44. And the L income gains 0.07 at $14.07. Check your rates anytime, every day on federalnewsradio.com. Dimitri Sotis, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
It was such a surreal experience to be getting ready for class and then a few hours later being diagnosed with cancer. It's just unbelievable. I was told I had 2.5 years to live.
When John Ivey was diagnosed with cancer, he couldn't afford the medicine he needed.
When it came down to money, it was very devastating. And here's a new drug that's potentially life-saving. And then all of a sudden to be told you can't afford it, you can't have it. I was dying, and I wanted to live.
John contacted Novartis about the medicine he needed.
They told us to just forget about the money portion of it. They basically eliminated that part of the equation and said, let's just get you well. If it wasn't for people like that, people like me wouldn't be here.
Developing new medicines, getting them to the patients who need them. Novartis. Think what's possible.
Getting things done more easily from more locations and more devices. That's the power Microsoft Office 2010 delivers to you and your agency. With Office 2010, federal workers will find rich and powerful new ways to efficiently deliver their best work, whether from your PC, phone, or web browser, at work, home, or on the road. Also, give life to your ideas with new data analysis and visualization features. Put the power of Office 2010 to work for you. Learn more at msgovoffice2010.com. That's msgovoffice2010.com.
Have you delayed putting together an estate plan? Your retirement savings, insurance policies, and real estate are all part of your assets. If you or your partner should ever become incapacitated, who will handle the financial or medical decisions? And how do you want those assets distributed? Hi, I'm Wayne Zell of Zell Law and host of Blueprint for Wealth Saturdays at 10 a.m. Find out how you can better secure your future this Saturday or call me at Zell Law at 571-203-9355. Or visit us on the web at zelllaw.com.
I'm Linda Carr, President and CEO of TMR. TMR is a small, disadvantaged, woman-owned business. We provide enterprise architecture, governance, and IT operational support to DOD and civilian agencies, including OSD, DIA, DOJ, and DHS. Our contract vehicles include GSA 8A STARS, IT 70, MOBUS, FEDSIM, Alliant, and Navy Seaport E. For your agency's IT needs, visit TMR at TMRHQ.com or call 703-323-1700.
If you work for or have worked for the federal government, I want to tell you about an organization that's been around for over 80 years. It's NARF. Organized in 1921 to protect and enhance the retirement and health benefits of federal employees, NARF wants you to know that laws can change and so can your retirement security. Protect it by joining NARF, the only association that's dedicated to making sure your retirement is secure when you reach retirement. Don't wait until after you retire to join NARF. Check out their website at www.narfe.org. You'll see that NARF is a great investment for your retirement future. Then click on the Join Now button and join hundreds of thousands of federal retirees and employees as a NARF member. That's www.narfe.org. Or call 1-800-627-3394 and ask them to send you some information. Join now. NARF, your best retirement investment.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey, and I'm talking with Federal Managers Association President Patricia Niehaus. She's kind enough to take a break here and from her job in California and discuss some things with us. Patricia, I was just looking at Government Executive, and they're reporting on this pay freeze proposal, and it says here it would freeze federal salaries, eliminate bonuses, collect federal employees' unpaid taxes, and cap the number of government workers at current levels. Now, this goes exactly counter to what the Obama administration has been doing. It hasn't been overly generous with pay raises, and the bonuses are something that sort of are self-generating, but a number of agencies are expanding to meet national security needs and issues and deal with the financial problems and whatnot. I mean, what do you think about this amendment? What do you think of its chances?
Well, I certainly hope it won't pass. There are too many very different items in this bill to have one set opinion. But for the most part, I think freezing government, you know, just making a numbers freeze is unrealistic when you have a changing mission that, you know, all branches of government, their mission changes on a regular basis, and they may need to increase or decrease manning to meet that mission.
Well, I know in the past, every time that I can recall where somebody imposed a hiring freeze on the government, for example, they immediately started exempting agencies, defense, Postal Service, mm-hmm. IRS. And after a while, it became almost ludicrous. The agencies that were still under a freeze were, you know, very, very minor ones, a minimal contact with the public. But it seemed to underscore, although nobody ever made that point, the importance of the government. People want the government to be cut. They want it to be more efficient. They want it to run smoother, except the agencies that supply them with Social Security check or their tax refund. And those seem to be necessary agencies.
Yeah, and I think that if it's a government-wide freeze, it's going to impact the entitlement agencies like Social Security. You know, if you have a government-wide freeze and you have six vacant claims examiners, I don't know how many cases they work in a month, but that number of cases would not be getting worked.
That's one thing that opponents of cuts always bring up, because Social Security is known as the third rail in American politics, and that is touch it and you die. every time anybody talks about government cuts, when you bring up Social Security, I think one in every six Americans now gets a Social Security check, and that number is going to be increasing as we age as a population. So the government is a very big thing, and freezing it may sound like a good thing in theory, but in practice it's much easier said than done, and not usually as popular as the freezer believed it would be. Now, back to the National Security Personnel System. They're spiraling back 226,000 people, who most of whom went into the NSPS under duress. They were drafted, went in. But now a lot of them, I know I'm hearing from them, and I've talked with your people, and you're hearing from people who, A, think it was a good thing, say they did better under NSPS. It had the flexibilities, which is kind of thing you point out, that allowed defense to hire doctors and engineers and people of that caliber. But they've done better. Now that they're forcibly going back, they're worried that when they go back to their old, to the GS system, that they're going to be put into a category where they will get only half of future pay raises until the salary for their grade and their job catches up with their NSPS salaries. Is that the way it's going to work?
Yes, it is. And at FMA, we have been opposing that. We still oppose that. We've basically gotten feedback from OPM and DOD that, you know, this is the way the law is currently written, and they don't foresee an immediate change in that. So I think the only way we would get around that would probably be congressional action.
Well, I got a lot of emails, by a lot, let's say a dozen, from people who like the system, and then many admitted they didn't want to go in initially, but they like the system now. And one guy described himself as a GS-14 Step 15. That is, he had done so much better under the NSPS that he was making, it was $4,000 or $5,000, $6,000 more a year than he would have under the GS. Are you seeing cases like that?
Absolutely. Of the folks who've already transitioned out of NSPS, 21% of them are on pay retention because they are transitioning out at a salary above step 10 of their pay grade.
Okay, so it's very real. It's not the small numbers that the unions initially said.
No, well, the unions only represent less. The bargaining unit employees under NSPS were less than 0.5%.
Okay.
Of the total NSPS people.
All right, Patricia, we need to take a short break here if you can stick with us. Be right back here on WFED 1500 AM.
Nurse means noble. Nurse means selfless. Mothers nurse their children. You nurse someone back to health. If there were ever a group of people more on the give side of the give-take continuum, it would be news to us. I mean, why does one become a nurse? Because working 8 at night to 10 in the morning is so appealing? Because the glamour of day-to-day encounters with a wide variety of bodily fluids is too much to resist? Nurses are nurses because their capacity to care is colossal. Their sympathy, superhuman. Even when you try to act all steely and businesslike, you can't fool us. We still see the love in the tough. We can still hear that gargantuan heart all squishy with compassion thumping away. So while too often you yield the spotlight for just this moment, we're asking all the nurses out there to do what clearly doesn't come natural and take a bow. Kaiser Permanente. May our 45,000 nurses all live long and thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Well, you know, Facebook has been having somewhat of a problem because they're just sharing your data with everybody. Mm-hmm. Deactivation is not the same as deletion.
The information is still out there.
And what
right? They
try to do is they try to urge you to deactivate, and they try to keep you away from that nasty deletion page. You see, deactivation simply turns off your account, but does not remove the data. The idea behind deactivation is that someday you'll be back.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hi, I'm speaking with Patricia Niehaus. She is president of the Federal Managers Association and a federal worker herself in California. Do you do a Travis Air Force Base?
Yes.
Okay. But I'm looking through the FMA, your newsletter to members, which, by the way, is always excellent. And I know a lot of people who are not FMA members, such as myself, read it. And talking in here about this federal internship bill, it's moving forward, and it would advance and enhance the intern program in the government. And see, Jerry Connolly, congressman from Northern Virginia, a Democrat, has introduced a bill to be sure that these federal internship programs are transparent and configured in a manner that benefits participating agencies, enrolled individuals, and American taxpayers. I know one of the complaints that the unions have about internship programs in the government is they say that the intern programs are used to avoid the merit system, that is to bring people in, bright young people from college, bring them into government, put them on a fast track, and then make them permanent without going through the regular procedures, and they're in effect advancing, I guess, on the backs of people who've been in government for a longer bit of time and didn't get an internship. What do you think about this internship program?
Well, Air Force has had an internship program for a long time. As a matter of fact, one of my current coworkers started out as an intern. When he completed his college degree, he came into civil service. I think it's an excellent means to grow a good employee. You have people come in on usually internships are a 3-year basis, and then it converts to a full-time permanent position. But I think I'm in favor of intern programs. You get 3 years to look at the employee. You train them the way you want them to be trained. And we're bringing in people with higher education, which is, I think, always a benefit to an organization.
Well, I can see why the unions say they don't like this, because it could be abused, and it could be used just to fast-track these people, these millenniums who want to be fast-tracked and want training and want feedback. But on the other hand, I noticed in your newsletter that it said here only a 6% conversion rate of federal interns to full-time positions as compared to 50% in the private sector. And I could see that, along with the fact that it's a 3-year probationary period, I guess you could call it, that would seem to argue that the government has a long time to take a look at these people.
Yes, they do. And the interns have a long time to take a look at us.
Good point. Yeah. Well, are you finding, we hear this anecdotally, and I don't think we do have a couple of millenniums around here, but we're told that the people coming into the government, they're very careful about picking a job, even in this economy. I guess many of them have very good educations, but they're very particular about where they work, and they're very big on benefits, lifestyle situations. That is, do you have teleworking? What kind of training provisions do you have? Are you family friendly? Are you green? And that sort of. Are you finding that with younger workers?
Yes, I think they're much more likely to base their employment decisions on those factors than perhaps someone of our generation would have been.
Yeah, we wanted money and a job, period.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
We had families to support, and that was at least that was my primary interest when I came to the government, was a stable job to support my family.
Sure. Well, the Senate, and again, I'm looking at your newsletter, the Senate has approved another telework bill. This is one by Senator Akaka, Democrat of Hawaii, and Voinovich, Republican from Ohio, the Telework Enhancement Act. And this stalled a couple of, maybe 6 or 8 weeks ago. Everybody thought it was a no-brainer. I mean, who can oppose teleworking, at least publicly? And yet it was knocked down in the House of the Senate, but it's back. What would this do?
I think it was intended to encourage agencies to allow more employees to participate in telework. There's a very small percentage that are currently doing it.
Well, one of the things that they, everybody has cited is the blizzard of 2010 here in Washington. We normally get about 14 inches of snow a year, I think. We got 31 inches in one day, and it's a hilly town. It's on
it
a
sure
river,
is.
So it's a hilly town. People forget that. And most of us were paralyzed. I know my power was out for 6 days, but we hunkered at home. We sheltered in place, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
But the irony of all that was is the employees who were teleworking, who had permission to telework and were doing it, while the rest of the government got a 5-day holiday, a week off, the people who were teleworking continued to work.
Yeah, which clearly demonstrates the benefit of the program to the agency.
The only thing I would ask is, in my neighborhood, if I teleworked, if they would also supply me with a generator with a lot of diesel fuel, because we were without power for 6 days. Not good. What's coming up for federal workers that's good and bad? What do you see in the horizon?
Well, I'm afraid we're probably going to see more Fed bashing. It seems like every time I turn around, I'm reading another article demonifying us, or I'm not sure if that's the word to use, but criticizing federal workers as a whole for perceived issues that people have with the federal government. And it does seem that Congress, at least some of them, are jumping on that bandwagon. So
I think one thing the government could do for itself is do what the IRS does, and then that is crack down on people who don't pay their taxes. I noticed that it was mentioned in this bill to freeze federal pay. One of the things that would also happen, in addition to eliminating bonuses, would be to take action against federal workers who don't pay taxes. And I know I hear from a lot of IRS workers, and they say it's not an issue with the IRS. You know, they're frequently audited, they're always checked, they have to show their returns, and if they have any problem with taxes, as in not paying them or avoiding them, they're gone.
Yeah, they have a direct nexus there.
Yeah, yes.
The payment of taxes and the collection of taxes,
yes,
which is their job. But from what I've read and what I understand, the federal workers who may be delinquent on taxes this year usually pay them by next year.
Okay.
We were told that it's not the same federal employees over and over.
Okay. Well, and also, too, in fairness to people, a delinquency is not the same as somebody evading taxes, not filing or sending in the wrong amounts and 13 deductions and that kind of thing.
Exactly. And, anyone can make a mistake on their taxes.
Very good.
As long as they pay the money when it's pointed out to them, I have no problem with that.
The jails are full of them. Patricia Neves, thank you so much for being with us, and back to work for you, and we will talk to you later. Good luck out there.
Thank you.
We'll be right back here on WFED 1500 AM.
The latest from the Federal Security Spotlight, brought to you by Cisco.
One department takes a market approach to cybersecurity. Here's John Strafert, Chief Information Security Officer at State.
What we've tried to do in terms of security is to deal with the high volume of information and then begin acting like a market would, of increasing the number of points charged for an uncorrected vulnerability when they show up, and deduct points when someone takes care of a problem.
To hear the entire show, log on to federalnewsradio.com. Will the top-of-mind security issues of today be the issues facing government tomorrow? Get the latest from federal experts on FISMA reform, the cyber initiative, how government is combating botnets, spyware, and other cyber evils, and more. Listen to Federal Security Spotlight, sponsored by Cisco, airing Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Security Spotlight is brought to you by Cisco, the leader in federal IT security.
There's no better way to study the world's best golf swings than to watch them side by side on the range. Move down the line from Arnold Palmer to Fred Couples to Phil Mickelson, and you notice not just the differences, but the similarities, like their wonderful balance, rhythm, and timing. And if you look closely as they leave, you'll notice something else they have in common. The same timepiece, a Rolex Day-Date. Available in 18-karat white or yellow gold or platinum, the Day-Date is put through 15 days and nights of the most grueling testing before it ever leaves Geneva. That ensures that, like these great golfers, it will perform as well in the real world as it does in practice. To see a complete selection of Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Tourneau, the world's largest watch store since 1900. Tourneau, the fashion center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
What about the Obama administration's open government directive? How does embracing new technology foster an open government agenda? What is the U.S. General Services Administration doing to be more transparent, collaborative, and accountable? Listen next week as these questions and more will be explored by Dr. David McClure, Associate Administrator of the Office of Citizen Services and Communications at the General Services Administration. Next week, join host Michael Keegan on the next edition of the Business of Government Hour.
If you're a federal manager, this year you're being asked to open up government by increasing transparency, enhancing collaboration, and improving citizen engagement. Don't take on this challenge alone. Join hundreds of your colleagues at Excellence in Government on July 19th and learn about the latest best practices and new technologies that are required to make open government a reality. Visit excelgov.com today to reserve your place at Excellence in Government, the premier best practices conference for federal managers.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. We've had a really interesting show, variety of guests, and coming up is the piece de resistance. Carol Bonacero, president of the Senior Executive Association. And Carol, you are calling live from your leadership conference downtown?
Absolutely, and just wishing my mother were still alive to hear someone call me the piece de resistance.
Oh, yeah. Good. Well, you certainly are that, and very well known. I was looking over your list of your speakers and participants, and this is round up the usual suspects. These are the top people in government, in unions, in associations, in leadership organizations, and management. Who's there?
Well, you know, we've tried to put this together in terms of what is it you really need to know about now, right now, mm-hmm. as a senior executive. So Shelley Metzendahl has been here from OMB talking about performance expectations that the administration has. Norm Ornstein is going to be talking about making his predictions about the congressional elections.
He's the best soundbite man in the business, too,
by
the way.
Oh, he is terrific, yeah. And very funny. In the afternoon, a panel that I am particularly fond of, in a sense, is going to be on the new labor management effort of this administration with Deputy Secretary of VA Scott Gould, NTU President Colleen Kelly. It's going to be moderated by Carol Waller-Pope, from chair of the FLRA. And I think it's really critical because an awful lot of managers and executives really have no idea what's coming down the pike, because these forums have not really gotten operational yet in departments and agencies.
What's going on with the senior executive service?
An awful lot. You know, it's the President's Management Council has three working groups looking at various aspects of the SES, including some of the usual suspects there in terms of how to make more, we've heard this before, meaningful distinctions in performance ratings and performance awards among executives, looking at the hiring process, including bringing folks in from outside government. So they're dealing with a number of issues. That's going to be interesting to see where they think about going.
Carol, I know that we've talked about this before, and while everybody wants more money, and we all think we're worth more money, you've said numerous times that on a scale of 1 to 10 or 1 to 5, that pay isn't the motivating factor for people who aspire to be in the senior executive service or for those who make it.
It isn't, but you know, given some of the detractors, and we know this from the survey we just did, and work-life balance is the big one,
mm-hmm.
It seems to us that you've got to do a few things to make it more appealing. So one of them that we're pushing for is to make these performance awards count towards the high three. And we do have to do something about pay, because while people don't come into the government because of the pay, we do know that as these 15s look at the SES and know they're going to lose locality pay, that all pay adjustments are totally discretionary, all based on performance. And we've got to do something to say, look, at least if you are rated fully successful, you're doing a good job, you're going to get an annual market-based pay adjustment. So it's not the big driver, but some of these things have to be in place if we're going to continue to attract the best and the brightest.
Well, you know, as long as I've been on the federal beat, which has been since the Hoover administration, it seems, I'm always astounded at the level of the responsibilities that very young civil servants often have, as well as people in the military. You know, you can be a buck sergeant and be in charge of a $20 million motor pool or a weapons system. And at your Senior Executive Association banquet every year at the State Department, when you look at the award winners and the things they've done, the programs they've managed, it's just mind-boggling bits of money. So I can see why they would like to be paid more. And that permitting their bonuses and whatnot to be counted toward the high three seemed to me would be a wonderful compromise, because now a bonus is nice, but it's a one-shot thing and then it goes away. But if they could count that toward their high three, given the level of the bonuses that some of these people get, that would make government work a lot more attractive, I
would
think.
Well, it would, and you know, there's so many variations, flexibilities in pay systems now that an awful lot of 15s are earning close to, if not the same as, some senior executives. So there's got to be some incentive in there somewhere. As I say, pay isn't the big incentive, but it can't be a disincentive, which it can certainly seems to be for some right now.
I love the story you tell of the GS-15 wife, I believe, and the SES husband, or vice versa.
Yes.
And one was going out to and you said that they said, how's it like to work for $10 an hour or something?
Well, it's a Saturday morning. He's dressed, you know.
Yeah, ready to go.
To go to work, and she looks at him at the GS-15 and says, so is that extra $1,500 a year really worth
it?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Slam the door, I can hear it. Carol Bonacero, thank you very much for being with us, taking time out, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Okay.
Thanks.
My pleasure.
Thanks. Bye. Okay. Thank you all for listening. And remember that our shows are archived here on our webpage. So if you didn't get to hear it, or if you don't believe what you heard or want somebody else to hear it, check us out. And we'll see you here next Wednesday. Have a good week.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT-FM-HD2 Manassas, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics.
Cisco is the official sponsor of FederalNewsRadio.com. The Cisco Center at FederalNewsRadio.com is your resource for data center, security, and unified communication strategy and solutions.
It's the only program of its kind in the world, a unique opportunity to help strengthen our country's defense and further your career. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University's School of Management. The only executive MBA degree tailored to developing leaders and managers in the U.S. defense industry. A unique combination of high-caliber executive business education, industry-specific knowledge, and hands-on learning designed to accelerate your career in the military, government, and corporate defense sectors. Offered by one of the country's leading business schools, according to a ranking by U.S. News & World Report. To learn more, visit som.gmu.edu/defense or call 703-993-4457. Do it today, because the last day to apply for the fall semester is June 20th. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University's School of Management. Do it for yourself. Do it for your country.
And now Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
Jim Warren is the CIO of the Recovery, Accountability, and Transparency Board in the Office of Management and Budget. He